Hey, Ray.
Hey, Doug. Hope you're doing well.
Yeah, well, another day, another dollar. It's really warm here and sunny.
Oh, man, it's nice here. You'd think it was springtime.
Yeah, hard to believe it's whatever, February 21st or whatever. Hey, whenever you're ready. You know, respect is essential for every veteran, and it'd be wonderful if the VA and all the doctors and the nurses gave everybody respect. But as continually learned, as my sergeant, my best friend, my buddy, my pal, my everything, I mean, we enlisted in the Army together in 1980, found out last week, respect doesn't come about. It's really unfortunate when the individuals that have served in Vietnam and then served in Desert Storm and continue to serve and put everything together can't get proper care for their injuries and illnesses incurred in combat. It makes it frustrating. During the Vietnam, we had so many individuals that got sick from all the endemic diseases, malaria. I mean, Ray, you came down with malaria, didn't you?
I did. It's been about, about a week or a week and a half, you know, out of the bush. And, yeah, I still have it to this day. It wasn't very long ago, a couple months ago, I had another bout with it, because it never leaves your body, and it's a bad thing.
You know, and that's the same thing we're seeing from all the toxic exposures from Desert Storm, all the endemic diseases that were over there, all the biological warfare agents that are totally verified that the United States Army sent to Iraq to use on the Iranians, Iraqi Kurds, and used on us, that left a medical disaster in the wake. I mean, you're looking at casualty counts for Operation Desert Storm now, where you're looking at 60 and 70% of everybody that served over there is seriously having medical problems. And we're looking at 60 and 70% totally verified by Department of Veteran Affairs epidemiology reports for Iraqi freedom and enduring freedom. And then we come down, and what's hit me so hard is, for what? I mean, for what? There's one thing if you got to go fight your enemy to protect our nation, to protect our way of life, and ensure that our governments are sustained and everything. But there's a whole other ball game when there's no threat to our government, there's no threat to our families, there's no threat to anybody, and it leaves so many people sick. I'm flustered. I mean, Ray, am I flustered by myself, or is there more people flustered because they can't get proper medical care, or they're not sure in why they're going into war?
I think most, if there's anybody that's not flustered about it somehow, Doug, it's because they don't have the information. They've never really researched it, or nobody's ever told them. I spoke to my wife last night, I think it was, about one of the things you had talked about, you and I had talked about the 9/11, what we had on last week. And it was, she was stunned by it. She said, you know, I've never heard that before. And it's like, well, it's been out there, but very little talked about how the problems arose, maybe not from the terrorists so much as it was other entities that was dealing with the 9/11 situations. And you don't know what's behind the curtain. You don't, you know, people around the country, maybe politicians, justify their actions, but we don't know what is going on, and we can't justify it within ourselves. And so we're the ones that go and fight for this country and stand up. But we come away with it with a feeling of emptiness and loneliness and abandonment when we're walking away. And then they tell us that nothing ever happened. Well, it happened. I was there. You were there. Different people, you know, different wars and things. And so we come back with a mind full of, you know, atrocities, more or less, that's happened to us and our friends. And they tell us we don't have a problem with it. So what do we do, Doug?
I don't know. I mean, Sergeant First Class Ronald Doff, U.S. Army retired combat medic, NBC expert, LERP. I mean, Ray, the LERPs in Vietnam are legendary, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. That's right.
I mean, Rolla was
I mean,
the
there's
worst,
been movies
you know,
made
and
about
got
it
all
and
this
a
stuff.
Lot of information.
And the whole thing is, when we got this thing and when we got the Desert Storm, it's all documented. You've seen the documents. We shared them. We shared them with our doctors and our nurses, and they disavowed that it's there. So, I mean, Rollo's going in with definitely confirmed neurological toxic poisons. We not only got hit by the pesticides from Desert Storm and here at Chanute Air Force Base and other bases that we worked at, we definitely got nailed by Agent Orange in Vietnam, as I did and as you did. We definitely got nailed by the nerve agents over in Iraq that the United States Army provided to Iraq to use against the Iranians and the Iraqi Kurds. I mean, the shipping documents are confirmed. All of it's confirmed. So they not only got it from us, they got it from the Soviet side. So the nerve agents, totally 100% confirmed. And Rollo, Sergeant First Class Rollo Dolph, who was denied care last week for this, is a man that verified it for the United States Army. I mean, how much worse does it get? So we know the nerve agents that existed shipped to Iraq by the United States were sarin, cycloserin, and VX. We know that the ones shipped to them from the Soviets and everybody got there were Soman, Taboon, Novichoks, and multiple sevens. So when you combine all these low-level exposures, and we blew up 105 sites connecting chemical weapons. I mean, that's in Schwarzkopf's autobiography, page 390. It doesn't take a hero. Go and read about our decision. And Rollo and I and the rest of our team and Colonel, the rest of the team is all dead. I mean, they told him and they told Schwarzkopf and they told Colonel General Horner at that time, hey, this guy's a bad news thing. All we're doing is hitting an ice cube with a hammer. This is going to make everybody sick, and it happened. And then we had all the pesticides totally misused. I mean, I wrote the report to the National Academy of Science on the misuse of pesticides. I mean, I and others did, but I put my name on it because they were senior military officers afraid of their career like everybody else. And it turned into a total travesty. And then you had all
Look how long it took them, the VA, to even have a conversation about the pesticides and things they use, the Agent Orange. And when they did start talking about it, it took more and more and more years to even get to the point that they were able to, diagnose or treat certain ailments, cancers and things that people had because of that agent. And now they've started talking about it, but they've got a lot of hoops you have to jump through to even get them to consider it.
Yeah, and then when you get to the doctor, and I've had this problem over and over, and this is what happened to Ronald the other day. We gave the doctor all of the documentation. The chief nurse confirmed that she gave it to the doctor. The nurse for the clinic confirmed that she gave it to the doctor. And the doctor comes back out and denies it, even though with the documents right in front of her face. I mean, this is a Dr. Anu Mani from at Danville, Ileana VA Medical Center. I don't know where she's from or who she is other than, you know, this is another problem we run into. We ain't got an American board-certified English-speaking doctor. You ever try to communicate with a doctor that can't speak English or they can and you can't understand their accent or their words and their vocabulary is completely different than ours? I mean, the American military vocabulary, it ain't like American English, is it?
No. The thing I found, too, that some of these, the foreign doctors, many times, like, they may come from a country that doesn't have the medical care that America has, and they may not be used to that, and they're not as sensitive to that as someone that was born here and possibly have gone to medical schools and things, but they've lived in a country that does try to help people, but not every country does. And so we have a bag of situations here. I've had doctors where I couldn't understand. I understood only a few words of what they were saying in a conversation, and I had to listen really careful to understand. And I'm not sure if they could understand me either. So, you know, we're in a situation here that there's so many veterans looking for help because some of these things didn't even come to the surface until years, you know, just a couple of years ago. And I think the VA sometimes is so backlogged and they're so held up and there's so many problems going on with anxiety and such with even the doctors and technicians and to where they don't want to make waves. You tell them something, Doug, you give them information, and they realize that if they bring it out to the surface, they're going to be making waves, and they can't afford to do that because they can, you know, be ousted if they, I guess you can. I don't know if you can get rid of them or not. But at one point, you couldn't even get rid of them, but it will cause them problems within the system.
I mean, that's the whistleblower. I mean, for me and myself, I mean, look at what we've encountered and what we can, because I wouldn't comply and lie according to Los Alamos memo. I mean, they have to ensure the use of uranium munitions, even though they knew they were illegal, even though they knew had atrocious health effects. And we got all those documents, and once I started speaking out loud and clear, boy, you know, hey, so much for a career. But the other thing, too, is we look at the immunizations we had. I mean, the immunizations we got to go into Vietnam were horrific. The immunizations we got going to Desert Storm were horrific. And then we absolutely, and I mean absolutely, knew Iraq had weaponized anthrax at the beginning of the Desert Storm, because the United States Army of Fort Detrick, Maryland, shipped it to them on more than one occasion to use against the Iranians. So then we had to administer the anthrax vaccine, and because we didn't have enough vaccine, they put, instead of using alum as the adjuvant, they used squalene. So in other words, instead of one dose, you got 100 doses out of one batch.
Right.
And now everybody is sick, and then you've got all of the botulism toxin immunizations and everything. I mean, I remember when we gave the shots and we took the shots and we knew we had to take them, there was no options here. And you're getting deployed, so you're getting all these shots in a matter of hours, you know, or day, you know, and not stretched out over a few weeks, but like all at once. And everybody's sick. And when we got sick, we were told and ordered to lie in the reports, not put it in the shot records.
Well, I saw on the news the other night, I live near Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, and they have a lot of live fire at those bases because they have so much practice, aircraft, helicopters, ground troops, everything. And the other night they had it on the news about this huge live fire they had as a demonstration. But, Doug, when you know about the depleted uranium-type weapons they have, when you know about the armaments, and when you know these things are going on, you know, we see a lot of cancer in North Carolina, and you wonder how much it has been caused. We haven't had a war here, but we've had enough ammunition depleted in this country to have a war. And the effects of what you're talking about in Iraq are the same thing would be here.
Yeah, but then you got to remember, Camp Lejeune is a horrific base already because of the trichloroethylene contamination in the water supply, in the groundwater, and all over there, plus all the other contaminants from the military explosive munitions. So, I mean, everybody that served at Camp Lejeune today that got out, they're sick all over. Families are sick. Kids are sick there now. And as you said, when we find out they come back from Iraq and they got hit by the burn pits or got hit by DU, they're not given the medical information. They're not told this is known to cause problems. And then they're told it's all in their head. And, I mean, when you're told over and over again it's your head and you know you're sick, or like what happened to me, I've been sicker than blue blazes, and I went to the doctor, and they just pooted it off and said, well, run some tests that I still haven't got done yet, and because they can't seem to get them scheduled. And then I go to a civilian ER, and they go, you've got a massive infection. We're putting you on antibiotics. Didn't they catch this the other day when you went to the doctor? No, they never looked.
Doug, I don't know. You know, I work with the emotional part, the trauma, the post-trauma, and the moral injury and things with Marines and sailors, especially in this area, and I have done other branches. But it's hard to determine where the physical problems end and the emotional problems begin. Because when you have someone with emotional problems anyway, and then they find out they're physically, you know, deteriorating, it adds to the emotional problems. And there is a great deal of suicide within the veteran population and the military, and some of that comes from a lack of treatment. Because, you know, when you have 20 ailments with you and they're picking on five or six of them and working on them, the other ones are continuing to deteriorate. And so we have a lot of veterans today that are really suffering and seem to be alone because they can't get the optimal help. There's just so many people you know, trying to get in the VA, and they deserve to be in the VA. But we've created huge, massive military over the last 50, 60 years. And now we're going. Now we're suffering the consequences of doing that.
Yeah, we look at it. You got a radiological. Obviously, we've got depleted uranium, which is not depleted at all. It's still radiologically toxic. 300 millirems an hour on contact for beta and gamma, and tens of thousands on alpha. And once it gets in the body, it tears everything up. Then you had all the radiological materials and all the radiological items and all the equipment that are destroyed. So you got a radiological catastrophe. And then you've got hazardous materials. I mean, it's been a nightmare for the Army. I remember during Desert Storms where General Franks ordered me to go, you know, go clean up the mess with his G4, and we did, and we're going, oh, my God, everybody's sick, and all we could do is collect it, isolate it, and try to dispose of it. But then they started burning it to dispose of it as if they thought this was going to burn and get rid of it, which is what's happened to OIF and OEF. It's turned into a friggin' nightmare. I'm flustered.
You know, some of the moral injury you and I have talked about, and I'm actually writing a book now called Life After Trauma, and it's a pathway to purpose. And then it does also entail moral injury in part of this book. But, you know, when I'm dealing with these young veterans, and sometimes they're, veterans and sometimes the young active duty, you have to, it's like we've talked about, sometimes you have to understand that when they're not getting the help they're looking for, and they know they have a problem, but sometimes it's hard to bring that problem out in words, maybe, and you're hoping somebody will be able to connect with it and help you out. But then when you began to learn, like you've been talking about how there was no justification in going many times, we went because we were told to go, we went. We were patriotic, we were nation-loving and all this stuff. And then we found out that we were injured in many ways, and we came back home and we tried to live that. And you can't justify it, really, in any tangible form. And you think, you know, during the Vietnam War, there was a word that we used constantly, and the word was wasted. And that word wasted entails a lot of things about a life, youth, innocence, whatever you want to put in that thing. And we came back different people. And from that point on, that was the watershed of our lives. And so we came back home and we were injured. Many of us didn't go to the VA because, well, it wasn't really VA. It wasn't veteran friendly back when I came back from Vietnam that I saw. They were inundated with a lot of Vietnam veterans, a lot of injuries. And, you know, I went to them one time because I was injured and I felt kind of bad the way they treated me. I didn't go back for like 32 years. And when I did go back, they had changed dramatically. But a lot of my injuries, Doug, I had lived with for 32 years. And a lot of it had probably developed, you know, scars over the injuries, but those scars are still tender and those scars have been hard. Matter of fact, to the VA, they had to rip a few of those scars out of me to make sure they got to the part that was really causing the problem, the festering part of my emotional system. But I had to relive all that stuff again. And it was because I didn't feel like anybody was helping me. And the men and women today that are coming back, and if they feel like they have been, kind of chumped into doing things and going into nation because of we thought it was a very wonderful thing, like we were doing a real moral thing, but come to find out it was not that. We feel like we've been used, and our lives have been wasted. And so now we're dealing with the emotional part of man along with the physical part, and it's created a lot of problems.
I mean, last week's radio show with Bob, there's no way to describe that. That was a roller coaster ride. We found out firsthand, as we already knew from talking to Willie Rodriguez and talking to the New York Police and Fire Department personnel in the documentaries, in Bob's case, his son was recovered. The body was recovered, but he was killed by an explosion as he entered into the lobby of the North Tower, as Willie Rodriguez has reported in the other police explosions, before either aircraft hit the North Tower. You know, and as Bob has said, they've talked about this and everything, and they put around, I mean, you talk about a moral injury and PTSD the utmost. I mean, we just heard it. And then the individuals that have gone this stuff and everything that transpired from that and the lies and everything else that have taken hold of everything. The left half, right. The right half of the brain, when you're a young kid, can't process this stuff. I mean, I'm having a hard time processing it, well over 60 years old.
Yeah, and when you lose a child or something, it's kind of a never-ending wound that never really heals. There's part of your life is missing there, and every time you see something, you'll think, I wish he was here. And he might have died 15, 16 years ago, but it doesn't matter. Every time, it never goes away. You see his picture, you go into a room, you go in here, you hear something, you hear children laughing, and you're thinking, my boy should have been here. And when you don't know who the perpetrator was, it causes you a lot of grief that you ordinarily wouldn't have if you could end it. I've heard of people, and we've all heard this, of where someone would kill a child or something and took years to ever find the person and then put them in court and try them. And whatever they did to the person, life, you know, without parole or even, you know, killing them or whatever. I can't think of what the word is. But anyway, the victims would always talk about how their nightmare had ended because they were able to find the perpetrator and the reasons why they did it, and they were able to sit down, the investigators, and find out what happened, and people came clean. But in the kind of situation we were talking about in the 9/11, there's none of that happens. There's never an end to the nightmare, and that is a lot of grief on a lot of people. The families who had loved ones die that day.
Yeah, when we look at all the consequences thereafter, I mean, we went back into another war in Iraq and Afghanistan. I mean, both those wars, as we know and documented in the actual official reports and in the 911 commission report itself on page 336, were planned long before 911, so they had nothing to do with it. But that was used for the justification. But then the thing that's bad about it, all the military responded like everybody has responded since antiquity. And they went to war. And they were given defective equipment. They were given ineffective training. They weren't given the information they needed. They weren't given the PPE, the personal protective equipment, necessary. They weren't given the medical care necessary. And now we have the horrific medical problems that when you talk to them one-on-one, they deny that exist. But when you get a hold of their documents, you know, again, the same thing we've talked about this, some things you need to know about veterans, a clinician's guide to veteran-specific issues. I mean, this is a medical document published by the VA or their doctors that's hidden from the veteran. And it lists everything right through it, exactly what we're seeing and what we're experiencing, what everybody's encountering. And then you go to the doctor, and the doctor says, well, I haven't seen that document. It doesn't exist. Yeah.
I know.
Isn't it?
It's total denial what it is. And when you're the one hurting, that hurts even more so when people deny that you even have a problem. You know the pain. You know what you're going through. Your family knows what you're going through. It's like somebody trying to explain PTSD. And I don't know, you know, I know there are some people that are trying to get by, trying to get some money out of the government or whatever it is. But I would dare say most of them have a legitimate problem. And trying to explain to somebody what it feels like or what it is, it's just difficult. And so they go without any kind of treatment. And these guys, there's been a lot of them that committed suicide because they ran out of options. And you had that in your own friends and on this network, Paul Lyons. And so they just run out of options sometimes, and they feel so abandoned that it's, the wall closes in and they see nothing but darkness. And it's like, I don't want to live like this. And so they take the quick route out. I'm trying to get to people before they do that, Doug, and you know, the prayer talks about that everybody quotes and everything. It's about help me to change the things I can, accept the things that I can, and all these. And basically what it comes down to, what I try to teach these veterans is there's some portions of your life that you're going to have to let go of because there are no answers. Now, that doesn't mean you can't, somebody's going to have to answer for it. But as far as me personally, it will wear you out trying to justify something that to which they've destroyed all the evidence. There's no evidence left. They don't want to acknowledge it. They don't want to talk to you. They will actually come back and destroy you if you do try to create a problem. And I think that's what's happened to you a lot of time, Doug, is you're my friend, but I see where people have done so many things to destroy your credibility because they don't like the message. You know, was it Orson said one time, the further a society drifts away from truth, the more they hate those who speak it. And it's like, that's the truth. It's the way it happens, you know. The darkness does not like light. And when you cut light on, they'll scream at you. Cut that thing off because you're revealing what's in that darkness. And there seems to be a lot of darkness nowadays.
A psychological impact is one thing. I mean, and all that and what the individuals did, yeah, you got to let them go and you can't let them control because they're not there anymore and everything, okay? There's an entirely different thing when a person has a rash or the person has respiratory problems or the individual has neurological problems or the person can't hear or they can't see adequately. I mean, these are physiological problems that you can't let go, that you have to get taken care of. There's a big difference. I mean, we can be mad all day long at the reasons for it and what these guys did to when they led us into war and whoop-de-doo. It doesn't matter. They don't care. They're gone. They're not going to change their decision, and we can't alter the decision. So yeah, letting it go there is important. But the idea when a person has neurological problems that are then disavowed and no optimal care is offered, or they say, well, we don't know what to do. Well, you don't know what to do maybe right now at the moment, but if you don't go looking for and get the answer, you'll never know.
True.
That's a flustering problem. You see too many doctors and nurses within the VA or the military that they're just accepting the status quo and not saying, well, I need to go figure out what to do, how to fix this. I mean, that's what Rollo taught and what he got abandoned. So, I mean, when we were teaching it, as all the documents said, and it all proven 100%, they hung medals all over our butt. And then they say it didn't happen and there's no health effects? You can't let that go.
No. Have you ever been in a business when they had like a prescribed set of rules and you were trying to get something done and they could not move beyond that set of rules in any way? It is frustrating because common sense sometimes takes over that. And I think any business with any common sense, or they would allow their employees to at least give you, you know, use their own common sense and maybe make a suggestion to you. But it seems as though everybody's running scared today and they want to stay by a set of laws and rules that say this is the way it is. And if you don't fit into this category, then you don't have a problem. And there's a lot of common sense being overrun, and we're losing a lot of common sense on this stuff. So I guess we moved into an area today where we're going to help take care of ourselves because other people won't do it. And that's what I'm trying to promote.
That's what we've got to promote. I mean, you've got to get the thing out there, and as we've worked and slowly worked with vets and we've got them in there, granted we have to help them get the information to get their medical care. But then we got to help them get in there and get their education, get their training so they can move on in life and make an income based on their physiological capabilities. Yeah, granted, you're going to come back and you're only 20-some-odd years old. Well, you might not be able to run on top of a roof or leap tall buildings anymore. But you can sure find out another occupation, another employment, get the education and training you need, and excel in that new endeavor. Because I think one thing in the military and everybody's learned is perseverance.
That's
right.
You
know how to make it happen. You know how to keep alive. You know how to get through the worst of the worst.
Adapt, improvise, and overcome. That was what we were trained. And I still have to utilize that today. I had a call just a little while ago. It was from a mental health facilitator here in where I live in New Bern. And it's not VA or anything, but they called me and said they had a veteran and his wife in there, had been there for a while. But they have a lot of questions. He has a lot of questions to which they have no answers. And so they asked me, would I come and speak to him and my wife, speak to his wife, because my wife has lived with me for 45 years. It'd be like your wife going with you, and because she knows who you are, Doug, and she knows all about you. But
now,
people are looking for answers, Doug, and they're not getting them like they wanted to.
Well, within the family structure, you have these young wives that don't have the knowledge, they don't have the capabilities, they don't know how to deal with it, and they're running scared themselves. And when they see their loved one deteriorate all the way around, they don't know what to do.
I mean, they don't, and there's young children involved many times. And the woman is trying to take care of the young children at the same time trying to take care of her husband. And they're both dying from the same disease, more or less. You know, there's a lot of collateral damage with this stuff. And marriages is a big part of that collateral damage, because there's chasms within this family between him and her. He's got a mental issue that maybe it didn't come out all of a sudden, but it has come within time. And now she doesn't know what to do about it. He goes to the VA, for instance, or mental health, and they put him on Oxycontin, or they put him on some psychotropic drug, or they put him on some, and the guy just wants to sleep all day long, or he doesn't want to get up, and he doesn't want to take care of the kids, and he's irritable, and the man is has an addiction to drugs now, where he never had that before. And, it's creating problems. Drugs and psychotropic drugs do not fix anybody. All they do is sedate them. All they do is intoxicate them. And in my book I'm writing, I'm talking about that, and Dr. Billings has had a lot to say about that. He just wrote a book, The Invisible Scars, and he talked about how we're trying to fix people with medications, and it won't do it. You have to help them with tangible ways, and the physical. To sit there and tell a man that's in full of pain, how to sit there and just tell him how to get relief from that by maybe sitting in warm water, or maybe some kind of remedy, or wrap himself in something, and that's not going to get it fixed. You have to find out what the problem is and fix it from the inside out, and that's what they're not doing many times.
Yeah, you see all this stuff happening. I mean, drug and alcohol, the number of people that are falling to rely on that for self-medication or to sleep through the night is staggering. But then you see that not just in the military, you see that in the general population. I mean,
exactly.
You go to the store again, or Valentine's Day this last week and everything else, or any holiday or whatever. I mean, the booze is stocked up and the booze walks out.
Yeah.
And where does it go? I mean, what for and what purpose? And then you hear all the problems. I mean, we got enough problems already without getting drugged up or doped up or drunk up and losing rational thought patterns that you regret later on, because we all have our extraordinarily bad days some days.
That's true. And, if you're good on the alcohol and the drug kind of, substance use and abuse, you'll find bad days. You'll make sure you have a bad day, or that'll be your excuse. But the substance problems is always the cheapest route. You can medicate yourself a lot cheaper than you can go to a doctor. And so people take the path of least resistance. I just wrote a chapter on taking the path of least resistance. And it's about you can't do those type of things. They say that people and rivers are both made crooked by taking the path of least resistance. And if you look on a map, you'll see where a river just zigzags everywhere. And the reason it is because it's avoiding hard places. A lot of our veterans in active duty are resisting some help because they can't afford it, or they can't they don't think they think it might affect their careers or whatever it is, and so they're choosing a lesser path. But that lesser path will lead you to nowhere. It'll cause you more problems because there's so much, you know, problems that add to your life when you become intoxicated. A DWI will cost you $10,000, and you'll lose your license. And so that could cost your entire career. That could cost you whatever you do for a living. And so I don't, you know, we need to make sure people know, these veterans know, their families know, substance problems need to be dealt with real quickly. You can get help for that if you'll tell the VA or tell your medical physician or whoever it is that you've got a problem with alcohol. They'll be able to put you into a certain area that you can get rid of those problems. But you cannot fix your life, your mind, or your body with alcohol or drugs. It's a good relaxer, but it's a bad, bad lifestyle.
One thing that showed up in the reports here in the last 48 hours is the fact there's all kinds of narcotics and meds disappearing out of the VA or disappearing within the VA. I mean, all this stuff is supposed to be totally controlled, and you got to figure out, okay, where's it going and what's happening? And some indication and some reports are the guys that are living in there controlling it are taking it for their own use because they can't get proper care. And true. So they're using this, you know, and we've had that happen for many, many years.
That's true. They had me on 8 hydrocodone a day at one time. And I did get off of all of them, but they had me on 8 hydrocodone a day. And one time I checked the bottle when I got it, it only had 180 pills in it. It's supposed to have 240. And so I reported it, and I don't know if they ever did anything about it, but the second time that happened, and I called them again. So I don't know who it was or how it happened, but they were somehow taking 60 pills out of that bottle. And where does it go? You know where it goes. It goes in somebody's pocket probably. Either they're using it or they're selling it. And so the VA, in the massive amounts of medications they prescribe, there's no telling how much criminal activity goes on inside that.
Well, you know, it comes back to it, though. When you start dealing, you got pains and everybody, and people disavow that the problem or disavow that it happens. It doesn't do anything for deep down in your soul what you need to have straightened out before you can get the pain straightened out. Because, I mean, meds aren't going to work until deep down inside there's some healing.
That's right.
I mean, it's
you become more depressed. Yeah, when you see your life deteriorating before your very eyes, and your wife is always, you know, she has that look in her eyes, and the children don't want to be around you, it pushes you further down into that trap to where you feel like they'd be better off without you. And then one night in a drunken stupor or a drug-enhanced stupor, you may take your life. And if you mix drugs and alcohol, prescription drugs and alcohol, you're dealing with a very deadly combination. And we find a lot of suicide today that doesn't even go reported anymore because of the massive amounts of it.
What's happened in society where the whole concept, whether you're in the military or outside, to go ahead and drink and drug? I mean, we're seeing it as almost it's become, rather than absolutely unacceptable, it's almost become an acceptable notion. And it doesn't have to be in the military because the amount of booze and everybody is consuming is staggering.
Well, you know, it's like you just said, Doug, it's a stimulant or it's a reprieve from life sometimes. And, you know, you go to have a party or something, but I knew people that would drink before they went to the party so they wouldn't have to buy so much alcohol with them or something. But they go there to feel good. And then before they even know it, I have a program called Watch Out for the Hook. And a lot of these substances have hooks in them that you don't realize, and you don't know you've been hooked until you try to quit. And then suddenly you try to quit, and it hurts so bad that you continue the addiction. And we find that happening in junior high school with a lot of kids. They're becoming addicted on pornography, addicted on alcohol, addicted on drugs. I've heard where they'll have a party and they go into their household medicine cabinets and they get a bunch of pills. They take them to the party. Everybody puts all the pills into a bowl. They stir them up and take a handful of them. And that's the kind of party they're having. And so we find it all the time. I know at Camp Lejeune, the Marines, they fed the Marines many times, will take beer and dry ice, and they'll breathe the vapors of that alcohol, and it tears your head up. And so they're always becoming creative. We've got a society today that is intoxicated on those type of things, and it's because their lives are so messed up, and they don't know how to fix it.
You know, a long time I was a combat medic. I've had to treat so many people that had tanker's punch. I mean, it came about in World War II, was definitely there in Vietnam, became absolutely incredibly bad in Desert Storm because those were alcohol-free nations, supposedly.
Right.
And that tanker's punch, they kind of mixed anything together they could, and they were drinking. So, things that you would never put in the human body.
Right.
They sit together and they drink it. I mean, I had an entire unit went down one time. I mean, there was pretty much most of a company, and I'm kind of like going, I don't have enough IVs. I don't have enough Ipecac on hand to get everybody vomiting to get it out of their system. And it was just atrocious. And the logic behind this is, well, I just wanted to get away for a few minutes or whatever, so this is what I had available, and I mixed it up and I drank it.
Yeah.
It scared me as a medic, and what I saw happen to these physiologically to the body was horrific. I mean, we did have people die. I mean,
I wrote something a little while ago, and it said, the trouble with trouble is it always starts out as fun. Something became fun, and once you induce it, it's there. You're not going to get it back out for a while until it's already taken hold of you. They may pump your stomach or something, but the effects are still there. And some of this stuff is just outrageous what they're doing. But, you know, I remember I lived in Florida, and there were times they would have like a mass, it wasn't a murder. It was actually wasn't even suicide. It was where, like at Christmas time, we had a lot of migrant workers working on orange groves and such, and they would be drinking kerosene or gasoline, trying to get high because they couldn't afford the alcohol. I guess it's just in man to try to find anything that will make him feel better, and a lot of times it has deadly consequences to it.
But you're not really feeling better. You're just numbing your butt down, and now they got all this idea and everything about marijuana for everything under the sun for PTSD and everything. I mean, it's not going to deal with any of the issues dealing around PTSD. All it's going to do is numb your brain down for a few minutes where you don't have to worry about it. And then it comes back with a vengeance after you sober up.
You know, I mean, you mess around illegal stuff. I also go to a maximum security prison to speak to the veteran population there. And a lot of these people have got in, they were selling drugs or whatever, and they pulled hard time for it. You can't play in the illegal drug trade and have a good life. There are very few people that retire from that occupation. Because of the death and destruction that goes into it, but you know, you just can't. I don't think the VA needs any more drugs. They got plenty of drugs. Marijuana, you can find a lot. I think as Abraham Lincoln said one time about alcohol, he said alcohol has many defenders but no defense. And I think you could say the same thing with marijuana because it's an intoxicant. It's just like the alcohol. And even, you know, the reason I quit using some marijuana and drugs was because somebody had mixed PCP with it, and I almost killed myself that night. I almost committed suicide because all of my dead friends came to visit me that night and wanted me to go with them. And had I not had a friend with me that night that kept me walking around and talking to me, I probably would have killed myself that night.
You know,
I stay away from it.
When we look at the physical problems, and again, I'm looking at the Clinician's Guide for Golf War Illness. I mean, when we look at golf war syndrome overall, this kind of sums up everything people got sick in there. The Department of Veteran Affairs, quote, says signs and symptoms of this thing. Fatigue, skin rash, headache, muscle and joint pain, memory loss, shortness of breath, sleep disturbances, diarrhea or other GI symptoms. You go between constipation and diarrhea like a yo-yo. And then all of the integumentary of the skin tissues and everything else, and the chest pain. So this is the overall thing that's got happening. And then when we get with the depleted uranium and I don't know, I guess God put me on the path of DU. I don't know. I don't know how I got it. I don't know how I got the mission. You know, we can discuss that all day, but somehow I got put on that mission, and I'm not going to quit it until it's over. The physiological problems, the Department of Veteran Affairs says, quote, from depleted uranium exposures. Quote, sleep problems, mood swings. Well, my moods go up and down like yours do, and you and I have both been together with it. Symptoms in upper and lower respiratory system, neuropsychological symptoms, just memory loss. And this is that really affects education and training and job performance. Chronic fatigue, immune dysfunction syndrome, skin rashes and unusual hair loss, aching joints, headaches, abdominal pain, sensitivity to light, blurred vision, all the female GYB, OBGYN problems, menstrual disorders, gastrointestinal between diarrhea and constipation, neurological system disorders such as numbness in a limb, you know, and then all the birth effects and everything else. So now we got a synergistic relationship, the physiological problems from the other one get combined with everything. And then, I mean, you and I both took the anti-malarial drugs, Lyrium and the other ones, quinine, but you got malaria. And that's got all the same kind of problems with this stuff. So you're seeing synergistic relationships where 1 + 1 isn't 2, 1 + 1 is 5. And well, so you get confirmation, and then when you say, well, hey, where's the report? They ask the doctor, where's the report? And they laugh at you, say it doesn't exist. Well, we know we had the anthrax. How we got the anthrax, we've discussed that. Physiological problems from the anthrax vaccine, quote, muscle and joint pain, paralysis, chronic fatigue, exhaustion, headaches, weight loss, chronic illness, memory problems, numbness in the arms and legs, spasms, tremors in the limbs, diarrhea, constipation, and cardiac. Wait a minute, I got the same thing from DU. I got the same thing from anti-malaria. And each one of these exposures is causing similar physiological effects that are 1 + 1 is 9 now. And the doctor says it doesn't exist. Or they don't share it. I mean, if you go out there on the VA website, go to the Department of Veteran Affairs website, go on to the VFW, DAV, AMVETS, you won't find these documents. You go to the military website, they're not going to give you the document. Like the Zumwalt report, Department of Veteran Affairs and Agent Orange from 1990. You won't find it on any website, but if you find it and you shove it up the doctor's behind, you might get medical care. Because then all of a sudden they're getting scared for their state medical license because they're not providing care that's documented, but it was hidden from the veteran.
Yeah. Well, you know, some of the vaccines that you used or you were made to take, Chris talked about the same thing, were the very things that caused the problems because they were untested and they never really had it long enough to see the long-term effects of it. And the same way with Agent Orange probably was that nobody had ever really been sprayed with this stuff. And then, you know, you were not told to wash it off. You were not told to do anything. And living out in a jungle, you just got sprayed with it. That's all it was to it. You looked down and they flew over. And we thought it was mosquito repellent or something. They didn't tell us what it was. So, you know, I mean, you come back home and you start having lesions on your arms. Or you start having ulcers on your arms or your face or wherever you were exposed at, and you didn't know what it was. And so you just figured it was something in the jungles. And I've lived with it for years until I think it was around 1980 they came out with the Agent Orange talking about it. I went to the VA, first time I'd been with them, to them at all in 10 years or so, 11 years, and I went to them and I asked them about the Agent Orange that was in the newspapers. And they looked on maps and said, well, where were you at? And I showed them where we were, and they said that was one of the highest areas they used it in because they were trying to take the jungle out of, you know, away from the enemy. And they said, you guys got sprayed a lot with it. So, you know, it is what it is, and you had to live with it. I don't know if they've ever come up with a cure for it.
The children are affected because we know now with all these exposures and everything, depleted uranium, Agent Orange and everything, we know we have genetic modification in the host. So we know we have genetic alteration when the child is conceived. So we can see it in the infection of the Vietnam veterans' children, all of their horrific medical problems, all they encountered, and learning disabilities and everything, and then it gets passed on to another generation. And this all comes back to the whole thing where we started this whole thing. What was the justification for what the heck happened? And what's the justification now not to provide the optimal medical care necessary to maintain quality of life? We can't change what happened. We can change how we respond and what we do when we ask for help. But one thing I'm encountering, what Rollo encountered, this Indian doctor had no clue, wasn't interested, didn't want to do it politically correct, didn't want to rock the boat, and whatever, they got a green card or however they got into the country. And then the veteran suffers. I mean, Paul Lyons committed suicide. His wife was sick. His kids born after he came back from war were sick. And we've seen that over and over and over again, especially with all the depleted uranium-friendly fire guys. And then here again, total confirmation in the last 48 hours. I think you've seen the report. I emailed it to you.
Yeah.
That they are using DU all over Syria.
As far as the emotional problem, now my physical problems, I still deal with that kind of thing. But as far as the emotional parts, you know, I talk about this, Doug, and I realize not everybody believes like I believe, but I always talk about the VA gave me medication and therapy in the right amounts. That was good. But only God gave me peace and forgiveness, and that cleared up a lot of my animosity, some of my even, when you are fretting on the inside, it causes physiological problems for yourself. I mean, you can have a lot of rashes and things just from being so anxious all the time. But it seemed like God really cleared a lot of things up. But he also got my head straight, so I began to look for really good ways to find my way out of this thing. And one thing was I lost about 40 pounds of weight to a diet. I began to feel better about some things. I got my head a little more straight. I went to the VA, and they helped me tremendously. But, you know, when you began to move on a straight path, you began to see things a little bit better. You get your eyes cleared up, and you're able to really focus. You know, if you're on drugs or something, Doug, and you go into a doctor's office, like at the VA somewhere, and he even detects that you're on some kind of intoxicant, he's going to shuffle you around and get rid of you just as quick as possible. But if you go in there and you make some common sense and you keep your temper down a little bit and talk to the people, they may even listen to you for a few minutes, and they might even help you. I go in there and try to thank them to death, and they seem to butter up and just try to get out of their way to help me. So it's like a little game I play with them. But I'm telling you, they treat me good, and not saying I don't run against some people too. And I've told you about that before, but, you know, when you're acting better, when you're acting nicer, when you act like your head at least is getting on straight, people want to help you tremendously. And so a lot of our veterans can do personal things about their own selves, you know, and they can begin to go back to school. And people say, well, am I going to lose my disability if I get better? Not necessarily, because if you've got a problem, you've got a problem. If you've got post-traumatic stress, it won't go away. It'll always be there. But you can live good in spite of your PTSD. You can have a decent life, but you're going to have to fight for it. You know that for a fact, Doug, and I know it too. And we can achieve a lot in this life if we will just push ourselves on, ask God for his help, walk with God, work with my family, work with my loved ones, and try to promote myself every way I can. You can have a good life in spite of your post-traumatic stress, and that's pretty amazing.
Well, absolutely, and that's for sure. I mean, when you and I got out of high school in the 60s, we had a one-way track to Vietnam. I mean, right. I had no imagination. All worked out, and God put it on the path where I ended up doing, you know, my bachelor's, master's, PhD, on to an incredibly fine career, and now we're doing this.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, God puts you on a path, but at the same time, you have to make it happen. You have to take responsibility, and you have to take action
to
continue on to help people.
You know, it, when I have a veteran, just like I was telling you about the man I'm going to be speaking to, this agency called me, the only thing I can tell him, I can give him some tangible things, but a lot of it's going to be on a pathway to purpose. Look, you can start today getting a different mindset. I know you're injured, but let me tell you how you're going to get fixed. And you have to at least grab yourself by your strap boots or whatever you call it, and get up, take a shower, comb your hair, shave, go to the VA, and go in there and tell them you need help. You say, well, they're not going to think I'm bad. Yeah, they are. They'll see it. One of the things amazing about the mental health at Camp Lejeune, on the hallways of this mental health facility, they have these masks on the walls, and each mask was really painted by a patient. And these masks are really, some of them are really weird. I mean, they really depict what is going on inside of them, and I can relate to them, I'm telling you. And you could too, Doug. Just walk down that hall, you see those masks. It may be part of it as a face, part of it as a skull. It could be just distorted in so many ways with the paint. But, you know, you look at people's heads. The thing about a mask is to cover your face up and put on a happy face so you can see it. You do a lot of work in the theater and such. You put on a mask, you can change the entire disposition of you. But the one thing you can't change is your eyes. If you look into a person's eyes, you can see pain. You can see anger. You can see, you know, just depression. And so the eye, when a doctor looks into your eyes, he's going to see you got a problem.
Ray, we're out of time again. Thank you. God bless you. You've been a good friend. Semper Fi. We're trying to make a difference, and hopefully we're making it for everybody, Ray. God bless you, and thank you, and good evening.
Thank you, Doug.